This episode was originally broadcast in 2013.
Major funding for Backstory is provided by an anonymous donor, the National Endowment for the Humanities, and the Joseph and Robert Cornell Memorial Foundation.
From Virginia Humanities, this is Backstory.
Today on Backstory, we're replaying an episode we put together when the DSM-5 was released. It explores the ways past generations of Americans have drawn the line between mental health and mental illness. It's often argued that a diagnosis can be limited by language, that the very words used to describe an illness can determine who is seen to have that illness, and this can have very real implications for those people diagnosed.
In his book, The Protest Psychosis, psychiatrist and sociologist Jonathan Metzl looked at the new definition for schizophrenia that emerged in the 1968 version of the DSM. He discovered that it led to one particular demographic being disproportionately associated with the disease. Metzl's story begins with a man that he calls Caesar Williams, committed to Michigan's Ionia State Hospital for the criminally insane in the 1950s.
He would have a pretty stable life, and then all of a sudden, out of the blue, would be involved in kind of traveling somewhere spontaneously, spending a lot of money that he didn't have, and getting into particular fights. And one day, lo and behold, at a time of great stress in his life, his wife was about to give birth to their child. He ended up traveling to Michigan and getting somehow involved in a card game that turned kind of violent, probably because he didn't have the money, and ended up being arrested. And when he was arrested, was saying that he was royalty and the king and other types of things. And so he was sent first to jail. And after a prolonged period of solitary confinement where he was, I think, probably physically abused, was sent into a psychiatric hospital.
And what was his diagnosis?
So he was given a diagnosis in the late 1950s of what was called psychopathic personality with psychosis. And what I found is that a lot of men like Mr. Williams, who were admitted in the 1950s and diagnosed with psychopathic personality disorder or antisocial personality disorder, found that their diagnosis changed while they were in the hospital, and particularly when the DSM-2 came out in 1968. New terminology, particularly the terms were projected anger and hostility. These terms became part of the diagnosis of schizophrenia in 1968. And what we see is that the charts of people like Mr. Williams change, in which the doctors literally go through and change the diagnosis from a personality disorder to schizophrenia.
Now, as I recall, Mr. Williams was African American.
That's right. That's a very large factor in the way that his diagnosis played out. There's particular language that's actually coming from Black Power protests that makes its way into psychiatric definitions of schizophrenia in particular. And so there are a bunch of articles that I look at that are from leading psychiatric journals that talk about the argument, and this was not in any way made in secret. It was right there in the leading psychiatric journals of the time, that Black men who participated in civil rights protests were at risk of developing schizophrenia because protesting was driving them crazy. And in fact, they coined a new term in a journal called the Archives of General Psychiatry, one of the leading psychiatric journals in the country. They coined this term called the protest psychosis to talk about Black men who were protesting against the government or in Black Power protests who were developing schizophrenia as a result of trying to assert their civil rights.
Was there any discussion of paranoia? Because as we know in retrospect, some civil rights activists had good reason to be, quote, paranoid. Phones were being tapped.
It's funny because one of the cases that I look at is the case of Malcolm X. And Malcolm X had a you know, at least according to the CIA file, it's kind of contested a family history of mental illness, they argued. And Malcolm X, you know, as much as anybody, had reason to suspect that the government was out to get him because he was being profiled, his phones were being tapped. And I've got the FBI profile, and they diagnosed Malcolm X with having schizophrenia, particularly because he was paranoid against the government. And even though it's incredibly tragic to read this file, you can't but think, like, of course he was paranoid against the government because the government was profiling him and tapping his phone. So a lot of leaders at the time had psychological profiles that were done by the government, and they had good reason to be looking over their shoulder.
So to return to the psychiatric implications of all of this, how did that influence Mr. Williams' life?
At the time, there were tremendous diagnostic shifts that were happening, but also governments were deciding, because a lot of these asylums were federally funded, what types of diagnoses warranted long-term stay in psychiatric hospitals. And certainly schizophrenia was identified as being a diagnosis that warranted more intense treatment and longer stays in an asylum. So by diagnosing a lot of these African-American men like Mr. Williams with schizophrenia, they really did increase not only the amount of time that these men were kept in asylums, but also limited their ability to contest their incarceration or being kept there. So I've got long letters and correspondences, for example, between family members and the doctors at Ionia, where they were saying, he's fine, let him go, we'll take care of him. And the response was, our job is to restore him to sanity. And because he had this schizophrenia diagnosis that implied that he was insane, it meant that he stayed in the asylum for quite a bit longer than he would have otherwise.
What do you do as a professor of psychiatry to ensure that the social context that you live in does not taint your treatment of patients?
That's a wonderful question. I've actually had instances in my professional career where patients have come into the clinics or emergency rooms where I'm working, and they voice exactly the themes that I write about in my book. So when I was in Michigan, I was working in the ER one night, and there was an angry African-American man who was brought in by the police with, clearly having mental symptoms, delusions or hallucinations. And at that moment, I'm not going to say, we're suffering from a socially constructed condition here that we need to kind of look at culture. You know, I think that that's an answer that would be malpractice. But I will say that if we have to remember the lessons of history, which is that our diagnoses, for better or worse, are shaped by social and political and environmental factors, and probably psychiatry more than other specialties. And so the patient that I'm talking about was brought in, and even though he was clearly in distress, he was also talking about threats made against him by the police and uncertainty. And I think that in a way, for me at least, knowing the particular context of the history, I would hope changed the kinds of questions that I asked of this patient. I think all doctors, their main goal is to alleviate suffering, but I don't think that we need to automatically discount the content of symptoms. And so in this case, you know, I probably spent more time asking this person about, you know, his sense of safety and what the threat was.
Jonathan Metzl is the director of the Center for Medicine, Health, and Society at Vanderbilt University. That'll do it for us today. Thanks for joining me to take a look back at the Backstory Archive. There are hundreds of other shows available at our website, backstoryradio.org. You can keep the conversation going online. Let us know what you thought of an episode or ask us your question about history. Send us an email at backstory@virginia.edu.
We're also on Facebook and Twitter, at Backstory Radio. Backstory is produced at Virginia Humanities. Major support is provided by an anonymous donor, the National Endowment for the Humanities, the Joseph and Robert Cornell Memorial Foundation, the Johns Hopkins University, and the Arthur Vining Davis Foundations. Additional support is provided by the Tomato Fund, cultivating fresh ideas in the arts, the humanities, and the environment.
Brian Ballow is Professor of History at the University of Virginia. Ed Ayers is Professor of the Humanities and President Emeritus of the University of Richmond. Joanne Freeman is Professor of History and American Studies at Yale University. Nathan Connolly is the Herbert Baxter Adams Associate Professor of History at the Johns Hopkins University. Backstory was created by Andrew Windham for Virginia Humanities.